Get ready to expand your horizons and discover great reads. This is Bookbound, a library podcast. Welcome back to Bookbound. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined at the mic by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we are your cattle selection specialists, meaning we buy all the books. Hey, ladies, how's it going?
Hello. Hello. Great.
It's been a chilly week, but I hear it's going to warm up.
Chilly, snowy, super busy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's been that kind of week. Yep. We've had to be on a lot this week.
Yeah.
And see people, and which was cool.
Yes, definitely.
We talked to a group at Okemos, Cheryl and I, yesterday.
Yeah.
And
yep.
The best
completed
books of the
our
year,
best books of the
which
year.
Is very much a subtle theme of this year.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And by this point, when people get to hear this, our cattle best books will be out. So the staff selected, voted list will be up and ready for people to see.
On our cattle.
We'll see it on our
cattle
website,
catalog,
and then it'll be out on. It'll be in the late Sioux State Journal.
Yep.
So that's cool and interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Can't believe we're already here.
Yeah, I don't know how
about
we
the end
hit
of your books.
It's December. I feel like I don't know where the year went.
We tried our best to read as much as we could from 2024 and a lot of older random books mixed in there too.
Just because we wanted to read some stuff.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to work through a list that it's like every time I hear about it, I'm like, oh, I didn't get to read that. I want to read that one. That's from 2022. And that one's from 2023. And
Definitely.
Yeah.
No, it's that reading is just like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
But we do have a selection of titles that we want to talk about today. Who wants to start?
Sure. Okay. So I'm going to read To Thine Own Self Be True, and It Must Follow as the Night, the Day. Thou canst not then be false to any man. Anyone?
The Bard.
Okay. Extra point if you know which one.
I don't.
It's from Hamlet.
Oh, well, okay. That makes sense.
So I got to read The Bard and the book, How the First Folio Saved the Plays of William Shakespeare from Oblivion by Anne Bossum. This is a nonfiction title for kids or young adults, I might say. I might recommend it maybe grade 7 right on up to grade 9 or further, I guess, because I'm not sure at what point kids start to study Shakespeare, if they even do in elementary school or middle school. But wow, this was fascinating. As someone who didn't really get into Shakespeare much, I hadn't really had a lot of exposure until I got to college. And I just remember thinking about how unique the language was. And of course, you know, back in the 1500s, 1600s, you would think they would speak differently. But this was a really interesting and very witty book. I mean, I'll tell you that Anne Bossum puts all sorts of little things in here, you know, to make you laugh. She's got an illustration of Shakespeare. So this could be Shakespeare, or maybe it's not, you know. It's just because, you know, so much is really unknown. She also talks about how it's possible that, you know, you might not be that interested. You know, there might come a time in your life when you're no longer interested in Shakespeare, and I'm sure that is the case for maybe most people, unless you're a really big bibliophile or interested in that sort of language. But I like the book mostly because you got a picture for, like, how things were in theater back then. You know, mm-hmm. there were little scripts that were, you know, rolled up into roles. And maybe that's even how, you know, you hear about the term, oh, you're getting this role in the play mm-hmm. or in the show. And how that sort of came about. And how, you know, for most of that time period, women were not allowed to be mm-hmm. on the stage.
Yes.
So you had, you know, even teens playing females. Who made the audience laugh. You know, it did change eventually. But I was just really fascinated by how many books, you know, the first folio, and we're talking, when we talk about a folio, we're talking about all the works of Shakespeare, supposedly, like over 750 maybe, were printed the first time around. And she goes through, like, who were the people that bought them, and why is there one called the Golden Retriever Folio? there was someone who I think he crossed two different dogs and came up with the breed, the Golden Retriever. So that's how he's, not only is how he's known, but how that particular folio is known, because the person who owned that particular folio came up with that breed.
Oh,
but
wow.
I really was just fascinated by it because I don't hear a lot about old content. You know, you think of the Bible or the Constitution, these documents that are really, really have old, some history to them. You're like, well, how do you know? And she makes it clear that you really sometimes don't know, because she had this sense like there was this one line that was like, to be or not to be, that's the point. Is that really how it goes? No, actually, the one we remember is the other one, to be or not to be, that is the question, or, you know, something along those lines. But how things are preserved. So anyway, definitely one of my favorite books of the year.
Cool.
And I hope that children, especially middle schoolers and high schoolers, might be interested in checking it out.
That's cool.
That's
sounds
cool.
Great.
That,
wow.
Yeah, it feeds into my love of history and archives and such.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's very neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, there's a special library in Boston that holds a lot of
the
these.
The Folger.
The ones that are still in existence. And when I was reading along, I'm like, oh, that would be kind of cool to check out when you go. Like, well, no, you actually have to get, like, special permission someone has to vouch for you.
You work in a library.
Yeah,
right. It could work.
I'm thinking public library. You can just walk in and request such and such. Not exactly. But
a lot of our editions, the book editions that come out and that we have in the collection, our Folger Shakespeare editions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep.
Wow. Awesome.
Okay. This is our kind of odd set, but as a segue, my book that I want to talk about right here is a historical thriller. Mm-hmm. It's actually 19th century. There's a lot of things I love about this book, but one of the things kind of right up front is that it caught my eye in its own right. It got a lot of buzz. I am a board member for a group called Library Reads, which has library staff across the country voting on their favorite books coming in the next month. Then we put out a list every month. And there was a big campaign among librarians across the country to get this book on the list. There's people like saying, everybody vote for this. And then after all of that, or in the process of all of that, I got an email from a former Cattle staff member who said, you should check out this book. She said, yeah, I saw you bought it, but you should check out this book. And she was very right to let me know, because this book is The Resurrectionist by A. Ray Dunlap. It is really well-done gothic thriller set in 19th century Edinburgh. It's that sort of the height of Edinburgh as a center of medical study. They have both, University of Edinburgh is a place to study, but also they have these surgery schools around the city that are teaching kind of more hands-on work. So, you know, people are actually getting to work with bodies, which of course also leads to a need for bodies. And a black market ring to procure cadavers for these various schools. So there's a lot going on, and the main character is somebody who is, it's like a third son. He's not succeeded in the military. He's not succeeded, you know, not cut out for the church. So his grand plan was to go to school, and all he's really interested in doing is studying to be a doctor and studying anatomy. And so he finds himself in Edinburgh, getting started, and for a variety of reasons, he needs money to continue his studies. So he ends up involved in one of these black market rings to procure cadavers for the schools, and things take off from there. But one of the really neat things, just sort of outside of all of that, is this is a first novel by a local Okemos High School graduate. Who actually is going to be at Hooked at the end of the month. The book is not out yet. It is not out until the end of the month. But she is releasing it there's going to be a release party at Hooked. And I'm looking forward to that. So I'm so glad to see people succeeding from here. And I really think it's just so cool that people are jumping onto this one early on, and it is on their library reads list for December as well.
Wow, that's so cool. Sounds fascinating.
Reminds me of a YA book that I covered a while ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Wow, all right. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, I have a couple of the books that I'm talking about today literally just came out. Not at the end of the month, but just came out very, very recently. And the first one that I'm going to talk about is called Vanishing Treasures, A Bestiary of Extraordinary Endangered Creatures by Catherine Rundell. And you may know Catherine Rundell's name because her book, Impossible Creatures, is a big book of the year for middle grade readers. She's written some other middle grade fiction, and then she wrote an award-winning, kind of quirky book called Super Infinite about John Donne, the poet. She's a fellow at Oxford, and she actually grew up in Africa and then moved back to England and went to Oxford, and she's just had this really kind of fascinating life and this really fun, engaging, witty, and super smart writing style that makes everything she writes just kind of magical and fun and sort of fascinating, interesting, and has a lightness to it. It's kind of hard to describe, but she's just really readable. And so this book, I have to say, about November 5th or so, there was an announcement that, or November 6th, that she's giving every bit of the royalties of this book to two environmental charities. She was going to give half, and she changed her mind around that week to give 100% of the royalties to these charities. But each chapter in this book is a little vignette that's beautifully illustrated about a species of which some of the creatures within the species are endangered. So maybe not every type of giraffe is endangered, but some are. And there's some really fascinating facts. I opened it up to the crow, which is one of my favorite chapters. But I'm sure you've heard about crow intelligence and people giving crows giving gifts to people.
Yes.
Well, this is really fascinating. So apparently, and I don't want to read too much, but I have to read a little bit of it, you don't want to double cross a crow because they're so formidable in their intelligence. They can hold grudges. For 5 years, students at the University of Washington wearing caveman masks hunted down and captured crows that lived in the trees on campus, held them brief in captivity, and then released them. Really mean. The crows, like very small Old Testament gods, did not forget, nor were they indiscriminate in their wrath. When the students walked past below without the masks, the crows ignored them. But when they wore caveman faces, the crows mobbed them, scolding and screaming at them. The fury and fear were passed from one crow to another, through the group, and another experiment where mask-wearing students were attacked and reprimanded after the original crows were dead. What a story, right? I mean, it's like so fascinating. So each animal has stories that riveting. It makes me think of a Mary Oliver quote, "Attention is the beginning of devotion." And with books like this, I just want everybody to read them because one of them is about the Greenland shark who's putrid smelling, really unattractive in terms of sharks, but has been here way longer than we have and has a right to the planet. And she gives that just that love of each creature. There's this a golden mole, which is really fascinating. It's iridescent, but it completely lives underground. Why would it be iridescent? But it just is, and I think that's fascinating too. There's a little twist at the end and I'm just going to give it away on this one because it's not that big of a deal, spoiler wise. But the last species is the human in this book that is endangered, and she gives a very passionate plea. She also says that we are phosphorescent. You can't see it with the naked eye, but our heads are illuminated with a kind of a glow, and it's just a really, really cool way to end the book. So, a wonderful book, Vanishing Treasures by Catherine Rundell. So.
Very cool.
Very cool. Wow. I always learn a lot about nonfiction from you, Cheryl. And your love of animals and the natural world always comes really shining through this podcast as well as in other ways, too.
And, I have to say, I saw this book at Waterloo Station when I went to England in June, and it had this beautiful cover, and I exclaimed loudly in the store. I was so mad that we didn't have it here. It was called The Vanishing Mole, The Golden Mole and Other Vanishing Creatures. Well, thank goodness it got published here, which is a whole nother, we could almost talk about it on the podcast, how things in other countries do and don't get published here.
Yeah.
There's often with Britain, there's just a delay, but sometimes they just don't get published.
Right.
But anyway, that was just an aside. Yeah. So thank you, Maddie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you go ahead?
Yeah. So I do have another book. This is also a middle grade book, Kareem Between. This is the National Book Award winner for young people's literature. It is by Shifa Saltagi Safadi. Oh my goodness. Wow. This was a really touching book. Made me think about so many things. This is about a middle schooler. His name is Kareem. He is living in Indiana somewhere, maybe not too far from Chicagoland. He's a devoted Bears fan, really into football. And he's also Syrian American. He is living at a time when, let's just say, like, I mean, I don't know if anyone remembers, in 2017, there was a time where, you know, informally there was something known as the Muslim ban, mm-hmm. where persons from certain countries were not allowed into the United States for a period of time. And that executive order law got, you know, recycled in a few different ways. But Kareem is, his parents are from Syria. He's an American kid who is, you know, struggling with, keeping up with his Arabic, knowing how to write and how to read it properly so that he can talk to his grandfather. And he is presented with this opportunity to befriend Fadi, who is a Syrian refugee, who is inside the country before all this that happens in 2017 happens. And just how he's challenged to really stand up for this young friend of his, because he's living, you know, he's in a community that really doesn't understand his culture or value his culture. And I'm going to say too that this is a verse novel, which I always really like because they're really quick reads. But it's just full of all these tidbits that children who are from bi cultures or, you know, multiple cultures, you know, things that they might go through. And I know that not all children are experiencing animosity from others who don't share their culture. But this child is, you know, he's thinking a lot about things. And one of the things that I really loved about this book is that because he's so in love with football, at the, I wouldn't say every page, every few pages, there's some sort of a little tidbit about football. And, you know, she's, Safadi is mentioning these, you know, little facts, you know, NFL fact number 4, rushing is when a player from the team playing offense runs with the ball without passing. Well, I was at Thanksgiving watching the Lions, and I had to ask, like, what is a flag? What does that mean? You know, and that's one of the tidbits in here. So I really love how she really weaves this very natural admiration of a sport that a lot of young adults have, as well as regular adults. Go Lions! But this is just an amazing book, and I'm so glad that it won the National Book Award.
Sounds great. Wow.
So interestingly, I want to talk about one of the runners-up for the National Book Award for adults, fiction, which also has an interesting kind of tie in that I want to talk about Martyr by Keva Akbar. This features Cyrus Shams, whose life has been shaped by a sudden act of violence in this case. His mother was on a passenger plane, Iranian passenger plane, that was shot down by the United States. And this is a real thing that happened in the 80s.
87,
maybe? Late 80s, I'm thinking. But it was, you know, it was a passenger plane. It was mistakenly shot down by the American Navy in the wake of the, and he was a baby at the time. And kind of in the wake of that tragedy, like his father is left with a infant. He basically decides to sort of there eventually sort of offered money. And they move to the Midwest, to Indiana, where he is raised really American. But is always sort of in between. His father works at a chicken factory. He's, you know, growing up, he becomes an addict at a relatively early age. So as the book is starting, his father has just died. He is in recovery. But he doesn't really want to live. But he also doesn't want to die badly. He wants life, his life to have meant something. He's a writer. He's a poet. He's really influenced by a lot of different kinds of writings. And so martyr is not, I'm going to go and blow myself up type martyr. This is I want to do something, write something. I want to study people or bring people to light who have done something with their lives or deaths and or both. And in the process of this story, as it's unfolding, one of his friends brings to light or brings to his attention a performance artist, an artist and performance artist who has received a cancer, terminal cancer diagnosis, and what she's decided to do with her remaining time is she set up in a Brooklyn museum, and it's just having one-on-one conversations with people at this museum. And Cyrus decides he wants to talk to her. He wants to maybe include her in this story that he's or book of essays or whatever that he's sort of trying to think about what he wants to write. So he goes, and a lot of the story kind of opens up over three visits to this artist. And in the process, he's learning surprisingly a lot about himself and her and his family and the history of his family. It's really beautifully written. There's a touch of magic realism in that he has a very strong inner, inner life and his dreams. People wander through his dreams that are quite interesting. Lisa Simpson wanders through, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wanders through at one point. There are interesting conversations going on in his head and in his dreams. But it's just a wonderfully written, heart-wrenching, humorous, but full of wonder. It's just a really interesting book, and I'm really glad it's being recognized. It's on a lot of the end-of-the-year lists. And again, it was one of the shortlisted for the National Book Award.
I'm about a third of the way through it, and I had to return it because there's so much demand on it. It's so good.
It really is.
It's got so much inventive form in the mm-hmm. writing.
Yes.
I loved it. It's like so vivid, and I can't wait to get back to it, honestly. Mm-hmm. But there's a bit of a list because it's hot. It's a hot book of the year for good reason.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Definitely.
Well, one that I got to at the very end of the year, I'm going to talk about next, is called Still Life with Remorse by Myra Kalman, Family Stories. And I'm sure that some of our listeners are familiar with Myra Kalman, but if you're not, she is many, many things. She's an artist. She is a textile artist. She's worked with, of course, an author. She's done 30 books. And I just discovered in this one, I didn't notice this before, she's been doing them with her son, which I think is really lovely, Alex Kalman. So he produces a lot of the books. He's also an artist and a writer. So she's a writer, artist. She's designed things like watches. She has a gallery show in New York, a New York artist, a lot of really wonderful things. Like one was called Sarah Berman's Closet. Now, Sarah Berman is her beloved deceased mother, and it's all this clothes that Sarah Berman took with her when she left their father, which is the story that's in this book. And the clothes were in an exhibit, and then she paints the clothes and made a book about it. She did Fireboat. Remember that book from a couple of years ago, the children's book about the boat? I think we might have talked about it on here. One about women suffrage heroes, got the pink cover.
Yes.
So she's done so many things, a lot of funny, humorous kids' books. But I really love her, all of them, but I love her adult books because they're art. They're kind of quirky, a bit eccentric. They're this beautiful, if you see Myra Kalman's art, you'll know it forever. It's this really, I don't even know how to describe that type of art. I don't know, but it's Myra Kalman. It's like very, very, very her. It's very vivid, very bright, often flowers, domestic scenes, chairs, dogs, fruit, people, families. But what this is about is about remorse. And some might say it's a little depressing. I really don't think so. I think it's realistic. I think it tackles something in this really beautiful, artful way. But these aren't books that are like a heavily plot. It's not fiction at all, but there's no real plot. It's art. These are what these books are. They're like little pieces, little vignettes, little stories, and they're sort of impressionistic more than like a straightforward book, if that makes sense. And I'll just read a little piece. She says, in still lifes and interiors, there must be a certain amount of remorse lurking among the bowls of fruit, vases of flowers, and objects scattered about the room. So then she goes into some really intense family stories that I don't think she's told before. Her relatives are from Belarus. They were they had to flee Belarus. They came to Palestine. Some of her relatives fought against the British in Palestine. Then they stayed when Israel was formed. And then at some point they came to the United States. She lost a lot of family in the Holocaust, Belarusian relatives that were left behind. They're just wild family stories about their lives and what they did there. There's a really poignant story about her mother, Sarah Berman, which is probably the story with the most remorse because her relationship with her father was very rough and he really guilted her about things. But there's also things like Tolstoy, stories about all different types of artists and performers, and kind of brings up the topic of these people that, like Chekhov, who we revere as a writer but was kind of nasty, you know what I mean, in some ways. And she deals a lot with that and the hagiography of some of these famous people. But she's also really, really hilarious. Like she says, right about now, you might be thinking, wouldn't it be nice to have a little musical interlude? And there's this picture with the cello and the dog, and always dogs. Mm-hmm. So it's got humor mixed in there too. But it's just really about resilience and moving on and that life continues to go on, and how do we move on after some of these really intense family situations and these really strong feelings that you can't really go through life without some remorse, and what does that mean? Mm-hmm. So I encourage you to check out her other works if you haven't. May not be for you, but if you do enjoy it, it's just, I love her books. I think they're fascinating. She also did some of the set work for a David Byrne musical, and I can't remember the name right now, and it was a graphic novel that we do have in the collection. So, I mean, she's all over the place. She's doing all sorts of collaborations and kind of always has. So, all right. So, Still Life with Remorse.
Facebook.
Yeah. Again, we've been talking about this a lot. It's hard to believe we're here. We're at the end of the year.
Wow.
It's just unbelievable. And so we are, as we talked about in the beginning, putting out our reading list. It's out today, which is our staff voting for their best books that were published in 2024 for the year. And then we recently asked our Facebook page followers the same question. And one responder said that she was so behind in her reading that she never reads new books. And we actually heard this year from some of our
staff too.
Colleagues.
A lot
too.
Of colleagues.
Yeah. A lot of people are really interested in reading stuff from their own TBR pile. Or
right.
Reading things that were, you know, maybe vintage mysteries. Yeah. We heard one staff member said, like, really retro vintage mysteries.
Yep.
It was like comfort reads, you know. We don't always get to the books from this year that we want to, nor do we always want to. But some of the responses, and there were many, and I wish I could read them all, to be fair, but I'm just going to pick some from each category. As far as fiction books, we heard about The Wedding People by Alison Espach, Burn by Peter Heller, Whalefall, James P. Everett, The Impusium by Olga Tokarczuk, Annihilation by Michael Houellebecq, The Bullet Swallower by Elizabeth Gonzalez James, and I know we both checked
yes,
that one out.
Yep.
Didn't
actually,
get to
I think
it.
I have the arc.
Okay, yes,
but
we
I still
did get an arc.
Got to it.
Right. There was a mention of both Craig Johnson, who was prolific this year, his novella and his novel that were published this year. That's some output there with writing. And then a couple nonfiction titles like Zhu and Lai, A Life by Chen Jian, Selling the Dream, The Billion-Dollar Industry Bankrupting Americans, mm-hmm. about mid-level marketing, which sounds really fascinating to me, by Jane Marie. And then a few mentions of audiobooks, and just a few of those were Just for the Summer by Abby Jimenez, The Midnight Feast by Lucy Foley, All Fours by Miranda July, which has been on a ton of end-of-year
yes.
lists. And then two, it's kind of fun, Kaveh Akbar's Martyr.
Exactly.
We just
yep.
talked about it today.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jessica also talked about The Message by Ta-Nehisi Coates, and somebody put that as their favorite. And then from our list that you can see now at our catalog and on our website soon, also Cattle Facebook followers voted for The Women by Kristen Hanna, three
mm-hmm.
people, James by Percival Everett, two, and First Lie Wins by Ashley Elston,
mm-hmm.
as well as Wandering Stars and Somewhere Beyond the Sea, which I know is, I don't
yes,
know if I want to say it's your favorite, but it might be,
it's
right?
It's one of my favorites,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah. So it was really fun because we had even podcast overlap, our own personal, our staff interest overlap. So I don't know if you have anything else you wanted to mention about any of the titles on the list that you...
No, but I think it is worth sort of mentioning that you don't have to read the newest books.
Yeah, no, you really don't.
We do these lists, and they're fun, but read what you feel like reading.
Absolutely.
Always, whatever.
Yeah.
The peer pressure isn't necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Books find you when you need them.
Right.
I think.
Right. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I have a little window right now where I'm not reading in terms of thinking about new books.
Yes.
And so I'm reading To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf, and perhaps I'll talk about it next month. But I'm just like reading things that have been on my, I want to read this, but I don't feel that pressure now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I give myself that little grace period.
It's sort of a, this is a unstructured read what I want.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Cool.
Right. Yes. I still might read ahead, but it's only because that's the book I want to read.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I have the T.J. Klune book that you mentioned yesterday, a really short story.
Yeah.
Cool.
That I really want to get through. And I don't know if this happens to other people, but I put a lot of things on hold because I'm really, really excited about it in the moment. And then you get it. You're like,
I don't know what you're talking about at all.
You know, in the middle of three or four other books.
I don't resemble that.
I don't have time for this right now.
I have like 25 books in my home right now that I haven't touched.
Exactly. Yes. That's like my coffee table.
I have even more of them.
I like
try to like leaf through them, but you just end up returning them because there's
I'm not sure which Cheryl and I would win. But I know we both have a lot.
It's like, oh, I got to get it before
but
anyone
also,
else does. And then it just sits there and you're like, I don't know.
All you Libby users, when all of your audiobooks.
That happens to me a lot with teen books.
Oh, yeah. But all you Libby users
who
put off your audiobooks and then they all start showing up at once. Yeah, that is my life.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So, yes, regarding that T.J. Klune.
I'm going to talk about it.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, please, I hope I get this in the next week or two because I don't know what's going to happen in the next month, you know?
Yes.
Definitely. And you often think you're going to be in the mood for something. And then when it comes, you're just like, no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly.
I ended up checking out a lot of books about like the same thing. Like I did like a lot of hobby and craft books and stuff. Because I'm like, oh, let me absorb this wealth of information.
Yeah.
And then I'm like staring at the pile and like, where do I start?
Yeah, I know. I do the exact same thing. I completely overwhelm myself with the topic.
Yeah.
Even cookbooks. I'm like, I can't possibly even.
Yes.
I won't cook anything now because I'm paralyzed myself with book ideas.
I'm like, I just need to bring them all back and just
one at a time.
Book in front of myself.
So I swear over the holiday break, I suddenly out of the blue decided, oh, I'm gonna go back into embroidery. I'm going to put all of these books on hold.
They're all at my house right now.
Yes, well. And about half of them came and half of them I'm waiting for. So, yes.
I'll bring them back.
When you bring them back, then?
It's all good. It's not like I was actually going to start on it. I just thought I would.
Yeah.
So.
Well, a couple of the books on the list of our own staff list were ones that I was going to talk about anyway. So I just want to briefly mention these. I can safely say I feel that one of the books of the year is James by Percival Everett.
Mm-hmm.
And it just won the National Book Award, and it's winning everything, or at least on every list that you can think of, and for good reason. Wow. You know, I can say so many things about it, but it is an experience. It is a book that is a powerful experience.
It's
cinematic,
obviously.
Yes, it's cinematic. It's going to be made into a movie by Steven Spielberg. It will be a book that we'll be talking about for a long time. It's not a flavor of the month type book. I don't feel like it's a darling of the publishing industry this year. It's like some big, important stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If listeners are not familiar, but are perhaps familiar with movies, American Fiction, the movie, was based off of his book Erasure, Percival Everett's book. And so he has several other books as well. But James is the retelling of a new story of Jim from Huckleberry Finn. And so it takes a lot of the same story, especially in the beginning. James has learned, and that's part of the story, has learned that he is going to be sold to he's going to be sold as a slave now to New Orleans, and he's going to be separated from his wife and his daughter. And so he flees with Huck on the journey that we're familiar with in Huckleberry Finn. So it's got that, it's a harrowing tale. It's you know, it's got all the elements of the adventure kind of story, but then it has quite the twist. And it's told in this, you know, it's extremely fast-paced. I couldn't put this book down. I read it so fast. It's sort of breathless and really, truly unforgettable. I know I say that here and there here, but I save it for books that really are unforgettable. James is unforgettable. And the twists just in the story, and I don't want to give much of it away. I think it's a full, it's like a visceral experience. And it's it is harrowing. It is violent. And it's unsparing in its taking you into that moment in time and how horrifying slavery was and how terrible slaves were treated just in dialogue, in those exchanges. It was just, it's a horrifying book, but it's also, I don't really want to say much more because the twist is what it's a book magic. Mm-hmm. It's powerful, kind of painful book magic, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. it's got my vote, James, mm-hmm. and everybody else's. So then the next one, Jessica already talked about, so I'm not going to say too much about it, but it's The Service Berry by Robin Wall Kimmerer. Jessica did a beautiful job talking about it the first time, so I'm not going to say much, but I had to wait to get it, and I just loved it. And it's a really nice entry if you haven't read Braiding Sweetgrass or Gathering Moss, because those are longer essay books. This is really just one, as Jessica said, long essay. And how needed is this type of thinking? And what I really loved is her discussion of ecological economists and biomimicry across a whole bunch of fields. So that, you know, sometimes I think as an environmentalist, it can get so depressing. You just feel like we've got Robin Wall Kimmerer, we've got all these experts writing these books and people talking about this, but is it going to do anything? But this really gives you hope that there are other fields that are utilizing these concepts of reciprocity, of not burning through resources. And I'm even seeing it, I have to say, I'm going to bring you up, Rissa, just with how you talk about clothing, purchasing, because we know that.
Well, I read Braiding Sweetgrass.
Yeah, there you go. But every time we buy something new, I mean, just the cost, the materials cost, right. it's the actual, not just what to do with it when you're done with it, maybe even 2 weeks later with fast fashion, it's more just that material cost in production, and just to know that there are other fields that are looking at this. It is encouraging to me.
Yeah, clothes specifically, you know, there's been a big push lately, at least in the online community, about like knitwear and crochet wear. Like anything you see that's crocheted has to be done by hand because there's no machine that can mimic crochet.
Oh, cool.
Knitting, there are knitting machines, but crochet has to be done by hand. And most of the it's kind of shown a light on like, we kind of forget that most of our clothes are actually made by people.
Yeah.
And there's actual human beings who are putting the things that we make together. Mm-hmm. And we forget about that when we just like buy something new and throw something away, buy something new and throw something away. And just, it's this constant cycle and things aren't actually being like kind of honored in the way that they should be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So to kind of reframe the way we think about clothes, that the whole crochet debacle has really shone a light on that, I think. So that's another way, you know, where we're thinking about like not only about the impact of our clothes, but the impact of clothes on the people who make them.
Right.
Yeah. And things like that. And having more respect and holding space for that. So it's super interesting.
That's
wonderful. The Robin Wall Kimmerer, those ideals that she talks about in these books can definitely apply to so many things in your life.
Right.
It's kind of a life-changing thing to read. When you haven't like grown up with those sort of ideas or anything.
Right.
It's like, this is totally changing the way I'm approaching using anything at all.
Yeah.
So I think that, everyone should read her books. And I'm really excited to read that. It looks just even looking at it.
Yeah,
it looks beautiful.
It is
the cover.
Both a wonderful set of ideas in a nice way of pulling down. It is. It's a good way to start with her if you have not already done these things. But it's also presented in such a way that it's sort of a perfect gift book.
It is,
But
it's,
like a
it's
meaty
not so
gift
hefty,
book.
Right. No. Yeah. It's a thin little book, but it looks like it's just, I'm excited. I'm sorry.
And it's so cool because, you know, she started out as a word of mouth, hand to hand through bookseller type.
Right.
That's where the booksellers are really the people who pushed Robin Wall Kimmerer's book. I bought it at Literati in Ann Arbor like 6 years ago. And I was like, I've heard of this, but I don't know why. that was how it was to me back then. Our holds kept growing and growing. Well, this book, I have way more copies than I even had for sure 6 years ago of Braiding Sweetgrass. So the message is spreading.
7 copies, 28 people on the waitlist.
Yeah, we actually even have more than that. So, yeah, we have, I think we have 13 copies, 12, 13. So, yes, but Aspen doesn't show that right, unfortunately.
Right. Put this in perspective another way. Yeah. She is one of those authors where, on digital, for the audiobooks, which she reads, and it's wonderful, just going to say, always. But she's in the, this is sort of the background of the buying and stuff, but I can get those in a way there where I pay a little more, but I get 100 units, 100 checkouts for people that can all go out at once. Mm. I'm always buying that book. I'm always, always, always buying that.
Gives me hope.
Always.
Yeah, no, it's good.
If you didn't get a wait, it's because I have just put in another order for those, and they haven't all gone out yet.
Yeah. When she came here to MSU, she said, and I might quote this wrong, but she said, "What does the earth want? What would the earth want?" And that was one of the things she said you sort of asked. So you're thinking about, you know, dumping a bunch of chemicals back in your yard. Would the earth want that? You know, it's so simple, right? And it's sort of like, might give people pause a little bit.
Exactly. So. That's what it's all about. Just think twice. Mm-hmm.
And all those small actions do add up. Of course, there's larger things that need to happen, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't do the small things.
Okay. So we have another set of picture books, I think.
Yes. And
then one more little thing.
I will make this one brief because I feel like I've talked way too much in a row now. Sorry. This is In Praise of Mystery by a wonderful team, Ada Limon, who is also a staff favorite. I know with staff picks, we have so many people who love her poetry. I know I love it. And then Peter Seiss, the great illustrator, Peter Seiss. It's a book called In Praise of Mystery. It's very, very brief. It's really about the love of the earth, but it is a message in some ways sent, and it's actually going to be engraved onto NASA's Europa Clipper spacecraft, which is going to go to Jupiter's second moon, which has a lot of water on it. So there's possibilities of life there. So it's sort of like a reaching out. It's like a poem about how we love Earth and reaching out, and a little bit about us sent into this place where there could be life. So it's just a really cool book. And I think that aspect alone would be sort of fun to discuss with children, and that idea of, you know, life on other planets, and to know that it's going to take 5 years to get there, but that we're doing that at all. Really neat. Yeah.
So I have a picture book that's nonfiction, Gold Rush, the untold story of the First Nations woman who started the Klondike Gold Rush. And this is by Flora DeLarge. And this appealed to me because I got to go to Alaska a couple years ago, and it was just amazing to read about all these women that I actually heard about while I was on my trip. You know, the contributions of women like Kate Carmack, who was really I'm probably mispronouncing her name, Sha-Tla, a Tlingit woman. She is credited with discovering the gold strike in that Yukon area of Canada and Alaska. I mean, there's some question, but we really think it was her who discovered that. And she married George Carmack, who went on to work with a number of people to get that whole area just rolling. And before you know it, like, a bunch of people from all over the world are coming to that region, climbing these incredible passes in Alaska under very cold and steep circumstances. This is a book really that kind of shines the light on the women who were involved in that period of time. In Dawson City, there's Martha Black, you know, a housewife who wanted some adventure and was told, "No, you can't go. Women don't do these things. They should stay at home." No, she went out there to set up her business. Belinda Mulrooney, also an entrepreneur, is that how you say the word? Mm-hmm. Who knew that, well, maybe I don't want the gold, but I know there's going to be people who are going to need food. They're going to need clothing. They're going to need supplies. And she went out and set up, you know, stores in that whole region. I mean, Dawson City became established because of that gold rush period. So it's just a really fascinating book. I really like the drawings, the beautiful illustrations, particularly like, you know, looking at that Chilkoot Pass, you know, it was so incredibly difficult. Yeah. And so many people didn't survive. So many horses didn't survive. Really a really fascinating book.
Okay. Wow. And then in a totally different direction, but also a picture book, I picked up, because it didn't make our list, but it was something somebody voted for, and it's beautiful. The book is Exactly as Planned by Tao Niu. I just love the color palette of this. It's sort of soft pinks, purples, green, blues. I love the tiny details in the artwork. If you look at the cover, you'll see it's a moose sitting in a kind of a swing on a tree, knitting, and then a fox sitting up on a limb with a yo-yo, and there's a phonograph above them. They're just sort of sitting down for a nice visit. And that's just the story of this, is it. Moose has just finished knitting a scarf, and fox calls and invites Moose over for tea, and Moose is like, oh, perfect. The scarf will make a great hostess gift or host gift. And, you know, Moose starts off to visit Fox, and somewhere along the way, and Moose has put the scarf up in its antlers, and doesn't realize when the scarf gets sort of caught, like the edge gets caught on a tree, and it unravels as Moose is walking to the fox's place. And, you know, midway, Moose realizes that there's no scarf anymore. And it's like, I need to come up with something for hostess gift, but this isn't really gendered. So they're kind of wandering around trying to think of what to do, and a bunch of animals help out in the process, and they come up with a gift. But it's a reversible book. So Fox is also not exactly having the planned day that they thought they were going to have. Fox has made this wonderful set of baked goods and has set it out to cool, and some bird has come along and swiped the whole thing. So, you know, Moose is on the way, and the plan for the baked goods was part of the plan, and that's now gone. So now Fox is trying to figure out what they can do to give Moose, and it's, you've got these two working towards the center, and it's they're fun, beautiful pictures. They both get helped and hindered a little bit by the creatures along the way, but it works out. You know, by the time you get to the middle of the book, they're having the perfect visit, exactly as planned.
Oh, so beautiful.
It's a lovely, what I like is, I really, really like art with lots of detail to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cover is just—it's stunning to me. I mean, it looks very much like, like it almost looks like a child drew it, but with a lot of beauty and love for what they are.
It's really soothing.
Yeah. Yes,
the color scheme—it's like some kind of muted.
Yes,
lighter.
But it's like if you like the second page, if you pull up the cover, cool. If you kind of open it up, and actually, I think you can see this on like the Amazon version of the book. The detail to this tree where Moose lives, you know, and there's a nook with books in it. There's there's hanging plants. There's lots of just crafted decorations. There's a sewing machine up on one of the limbs. Like, Moose is the crafter. A basket full of yarns, inkwells, all sorts of things. So cool. It's just the detail of it is really neat. So beyond that, I have one other thing I just want to tell people about, because I did just discover it, and as Madi was saying, and that is a audio-only exclusive release. It's only in Libby. Book by T.J. Klune, who is one of my favorite authors, no question. It's a book called Reduce, Reuse, Recycle. It's actually a longer short story. It's bittersweet, but beautifully written. It's takes place in the setting of In the Lives of Puppets, but well before the events of that book. So it's an android working for humans, which tells you it's well before what happened in The Lives of Puppets. An android has worked its 9 years and 51 weeks and it's now getting in a factory and it's earned its week off in the world. So it's got this chance to go out into the world. There's an apartment set up for androids for their 1 week. And in it, there's books, and it can go out into the world, and it can meet people, and it's just this bittersweet. It's got a week to live. He's warned at the beginning, if you don't come back, you know, they will basically, you know, hit, you know, it's one of those, I will hit the button and you will cease to exist type thing. But the people he meets, the people it meets, the characters that think it should be part of the world and not, you know, have to face this choice. It's just really well done. It's read by Daniel Henning. It has a neat but weird little tie-in to The Wizard of Oz, which is a thing right now, obviously. But it's a really well put together short story that I think people should know about. And because it is an audio only, I don't think people will necessarily find it. So I just wanted to let people know that it's there.
Sounds good.
So I think that's all we got today.
Yeah.
All right. Which was a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
We wanted to talk a lot today.
Yeah.
So thank you all.
Happy end of the year reading.
Yes. Enjoy.
Enjoy.